You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In a game with quite a few punches, it was James Harden who landed the knockout. With that, welcome into the first joyous postgame episode of Locked On Rockets of the 2018-2019 season. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship, and this is the home of daily podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball. On Saturday night, the Rockets got their first win of the season, 125-115 at Staples Center, ruining the debut of LeBron James with the Lakers. It was a game in which James Harden was brilliant, at least offensively, 37 points, 7 rebounds. Chris Paul also outstanding, 28 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. But a game that will ultimately be remembered more so for what happened outside the lines with three players, including Chris Paul, also Rajon Rondo, and Brandon Ingram with the Lakers being ejected. As far as exactly what happened, I suspect this is going to be a he said from the Lakers' perspective. Chris Paul was the first one to make contact in that after things got a little bit chippy, he put his hand in Rajon Rondo's face, poking at his head, and then Rajon Rondo responded to that by throwing a punch. Chris Paul then responded to that punch with a punch of his own. The version from Chris Paul is that Rajon Rondo started the entire situation by escalating it by spitting in his face. I'm sure Rondo may deny that or say it was innocuous. I'm not sure. I'm sure that unless you were actually on the floor, we're never going to know what the 100% version of the truth is. I will say that of the three, I would say that Brandon Ingram, in my eyes, is the most responsible because just a silly foul in transition against James Harden should have actually been continuation, but the officials didn't give it to Harden. But after not getting the continuation, for some reason, Ingram, getting the benefit of the doubt from the official, was still so bothered that he shoved Harden hard in his back, Harden not even looking at the play, and that is what brought all the players together and led to this situation where tempers escalated very, very quickly. So my guess is because all three players threw punches, Ingram also, after Rajon Rondo and Chris Paul got into it, Ingram threw a punch in there as well. My guess is that all three players will be suspended at least a game, possibly two, simply because of the fact that punches were thrown. Didn't matter that none were especially hard. The fact is the NBA has to draw a hard line on these issues, and I understand why. As far as who started it, again, we can go round and round, but the reality is, look, to deter these situations, the NBA is going to have to put it on players to essentially not take the bait. And even if the player might deserve to be punched, someone's got to be above that, or else it's a slippery slope from the league's perspective. And so frustrating as that might be, if you're Chris Paul and you've been spit on, or if you see it the way Rajon Rondo does and you've been poked in the side of the head, at some point cooler heads have to prevail, or else it's not a very long slope to where you get back to some of the things we've seen in past decades with the NBA and what they're trying to avoid this becoming the way it was many years ago. As far as what it means for the Rockets, look, I suspect that Chris Paul will definitely be suspended for tomorrow night's game in Staples against the Clippers. There's a chance he could be for the Wednesday game against the Jazz as well. Those are two quality winning teams in the Western Conference. So in the short term, yeah, it absolutely hurts the Rockets. From that standpoint, it sucks. But bigger picture, I actually come out of this somewhat encouraged because I really liked the way the Rockets as a team responded from that moment on. When that entire fracas happened, there was 4:13 left in the game. The Rockets were only up one, 109-108. From that point on, the Rockets closed the game on a 15-6 run, winning 124-115. So, say what you will about the fight, but many times, these types of situations are when you get to see what a team is made of, when they're really challenged, and the Rockets, I mentioned after that 131-112 loss in the opener against New Orleans, what stood out to me more than anything was how listless they appeared. And I speculated that that game, a highly emotional one, LeBron's Laker debut in Staples Center, might actually be good for them because you actually kind of snapped them out of the malaise. And I think the game as a whole felt like that, but certainly after the fight between Rondo and Chris Paul, it definitely took on that air. And to see the Rockets, specifically James Harden, who closed the door with a step-back three, putting him up seven with just over a minute and 20 seconds left, it's a really good sign, because I know it hasn't been an ideal start to the year for the Rockets defensively. You won't say they given up 115 points was a banner night, but they clamped down when they had to, limiting the Lakers to just 18 points in the fourth quarter and just 6 points, I believe, in the final 4:13 of the game, or 7 points, excuse me. I was one off. The Rockets were at 109, the Lakers were at 108. But yeah, a 15-7 closing kick following the punch. So when they really had to crack down over the final 4 minutes, they limited the Lakers to just 7 points, just 18 in the fourth quarter overall. And a couple of those buckets actually came in garbage time in the final minute of the game. So while it wasn't a banner night for the Rockets defensively, they did make plays late. And they also had James Harden doing what he does offensively, even without James Harden, or even without Chris Paul, excuse me, James Harden, 10 of 19 from the field, 5 of 10 from three, on a night in which Chris Paul was really good and LeBron is making his Laker debut at Staples Center, James Harden left no doubt who the MVP was. I won't say that James Harden was the best player over the course of the game, because he had 6 turnovers, many of those silly. I also don't think he was locked in defensively by any stretch of the imagination, but in terms of who made the plays when it really mattered late in the game, especially after the altercation which took Chris Paul out, that was James Harden. And so from that standpoint, I like the steely resolve we saw in the eyes of James Harden. There was just a certain calm to him that took over the moment from that point on. And to me, I come out of it feeling encouraged. Again, I'm not going to say it was a perfect defensive performance. It was far from that. But the errors I saw tonight from the Rockets were more self-inflicted from the standpoint of 16 turnovers, 6 from Harden. Some of them were just careless passes, which led a Laker team that's so athletic at all 5 spots on the floor to getting lots of easy points in transition. Extremely frustrating, but you didn't see the consistent defensive lapses in half court the way you did the other night against New Orleans. And then when it really mattered, again, the Rockets stepped up, limiting LA to just 18 points down the stretch of that game. I also think that we need to be aware of context. Some of these things that are going on with the NBA, they're not trends specific to Houston, especially with the freedom of movement emphasis we're seeing. Everyone is in foul trouble, and it's leading to so much more, I would say, offensive movement, because teams, not only are they getting called for fouls, sometimes they're more reluctant to do what they've done in the past to try and slow down cutters going to the rim, and effectively both pace and scoring has exploded. 20 NBA teams played on Saturday, and all but 4, 16 of the 20, had 110 or more points. That's a staggering amount. That Pelicans team that put up 131 in Houston on Wednesday, they put up 149 at home last night in their opener, their home opener, that is, against Sacramento. Scoring all over the league is exploding. The pace is at the highest it's ever been. I don't know if it will stay this way. It could just be an early season overreaction by the officials to this freedom of movement emphasis that eventually, as the weeks and months pass, we may kind of see that ease back and go back into more of our normal norm. But right now, the things we saw in opening night for the Rockets aren't quite as much of an outlier as they seemed. Now, that's not to say the Rockets are playing great defense, because they're certainly not. They need to get better a lot, really, across the board. But I didn't see the lapses tonight, especially in the half-court sets that I did in the Wednesday opener. And beyond that, I'm also seeing some things that are happening with the Rockets. Look, they're happening to other teams. The Warriors gave up 81 points in their first half on Friday night against the Utah Jazz. Does that make it excusable? No, but again, you just need to understand that some of these trends are bigger than one team, and so while the Rockets are working on their issues, well, a lot of other teams are going to have to work on theirs as well, especially in the context of these new rules. So while it wasn't the prettiest game for the Rockets, again, it was closer than it had to be, a one-point margin with just over 4 minutes to go, I felt that a lot of that had to do with self-inflicted turnovers. There were some choppy officiating with it. In terms of the defensive breakdowns that were prevalent in the half-court sets against the Pelicans, that didn't really happen as much. And to me, that's what gave me a good feeling all along, that when it actually got late in the game and the officials became less of a factor and it became more of a half-court slugfest, if you will, who's going to make plays, I always felt better about the Rockets out-executing the Lakers, and that's definitely what they did in this 124-115 win, improving them to 1-1 on the season. Game 3 tomorrow night, also in Staples Center against the LA Clippers. Now, when you look at the box score of this game, it's interesting. Now, the biggest standouts, as I mentioned early on, James Harden, 36 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 10 of 19 from the field, 5 of 10 from 3. Chris Paul, 28 and 10, 7 rebounds, 9 of 17 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3. Look, I said after game 1, when they had that shocking defeat to New Orleans, Chris Paul and James Harden weren't good enough. And it's kind of pointless to focus on the role players if the stars aren't really doing their end? And when you're led by two top 10 players and guys that are certainly paid like it, who don't give you that level of impact, to me, that's where your frustration has to be. Well, tonight, we got from James Harden in 38 minutes and Chris Paul in his 30 minutes before he was ejected, we got all-star level production, borderline MVP production, although I won't say Harden's quite there yet because there were some lapses defensively and especially with the turnovers that do need to be cleaned up. But at least we saw late in the game Harden closing the door like you want an MVP to do. So big picture, I come away encouraged because the two guys that lead your franchise, after seeming somewhat in a little bit of a malaise in game one, they snapped out of it in a big way. The interesting thing to me is the role players, because when you look at the plus minus in this game, and we can transition to the role players because James and Chris did their jobs, so when they do their jobs, it's just a matter of do they have enough help. And obviously tonight they had enough help to win a game by 9 points. But what's interesting, no one seemed to shoot the ball especially well. The Rockets as a team, just 16 of 42 from three, despite James and Chris shooting a combined 8 of 16, that's 50%. Between the two of them, just a staggering stat line, 64 points and 15 assists on better than 50% shooting from Chris Paul and James Harden, just phenomenal. But the fact is, they were 50% on threes on 16 attempts, and the rest of the team had the same amount of makes, 8 made threes, but on 26 attempts. So the team overall, 16 of 42, and P.J. Tucker, 2 of 6. James Ennis finally made a couple late, 2 of 5 overall. Carmelo Anthony, just 1 of 7. Eric Gordon, 0 of 4. Did have some very quality minutes off the bench from Gerald Green, 13 points, 5 of 6 from the field. Made 3 of his 4 three-pointers. But generally speaking, other than Gerald, no one was really that on, so to speak. But the plus-minus figures, they're interesting. The starters, they're not especially good. Of your starting lineup, Chris Paul is your only guy with a significantly positive plus-minus at plus 13. Clint Capella is slightly positive at plus 4. But the guys who really stood out, Carmelo Anthony at plus 23. Carmelo shot just 3 of 10 again, but actually had 10 rebounds in his 29 minutes. Thought he actually played decent defense, even on LeBron at times. Then Eric Gordon, plus 18, just 4 of 13 from the field, but I thought he attacked the rim. And then mentioned Gerald Green, 5 of 6. And the one thing I keep coming back to with those guys is energy. They were very effective. They got out in transition. They made plays in the passing lanes. They got the loose balls, something that plagued the Rockets in the first half, but I thought they cleaned it up as the game moved along. Even on a night that those bench players, led by Carmelo Anthony and Eric Gordon, didn't shoot that well, they still had a very positive impact when they played, in large part, in my opinion, because of how hard they played. And I think to some degree, that's what we're still seeing from the starters. Now, I will say, I think P.J. Tucker's plus-minus of minus 6 is a little bit misleading because P.J. in his 36 minutes, I thought he played some fabulous defense on LeBron James, especially down the stretch. LeBron finished with 24 points, but just 9 of 22 from the field and 1 of 7 from 3 in his Laker debut at Staples Center, minus 13 in his 39 minutes. I thought P.J. was responsible for a lot of that, so I think the plus-minus lies a little bit there. But I don't think you necessarily saw, I'll say, certainly James Harden, to some extent Clint Capella. I thought Capella was a little too tentative around the rim against JaVale McGee. Now, Capella did have 19 and 12, but JaVale McGee in just 20 minutes had 16 and 6. He was a force at the rim, believe it or not. Thought Clint was a little tentative. Again, he did have 19 points, but he shot it 16 times, making 9 of them. I thought he missed a lot of shots right at the rim. He didn't seem to play with his normal level of aggression, and it's worth noting Capella had injuries to both his foot and his hand in preseason. Maybe he's slightly behind the curve, if you will. They also found out that Michael Carter-Williams was a little bit unplayable, so that might have been a little bit of a hit to their usual energy. But the way it seems to me is those bench guys, it's telling that even when they didn't shoot well, they overall, in my opinion, had a very positive aspect because of how hard they tried. And ultimately, that's both the frustrating thing and the encouraging thing to me from the Rockets' defensive lapses in this game. Yes, they still existed, particularly with Harden. I also thought Capella a few times in terms of action away from the ball was unaware. I thought it was kind of telling that the Rockets closed the game with a Tucker and Carmelo lineup up front without Capella because, quite frankly, I don't think D'Antoni trusts Capella in terms of his mental state right now. I don't think he's reacting to things as quickly as he did in the Western Conference Finals. But when you have, or the entire playoffs, I should say. And when you have Harden and Capella, and to a lesser extent Ennis, although I did like what I saw from him in the second half, made a couple of threes, seemed to get more energetic after those went in. But really, what we're seeing from the Rockets, it's not so much issues of communication or technique or personnel. That's what was discouraging to me about that first game against New Orleans. Never led from the outset. And yeah, when you have a game you're dominated that much, then as they said after the game, some of it is a lack of communication. And you wonder about the personnel. You wonder about losing Jeff Pezdelic to a small degree. But in this game, the things that I thought went wrong were largely effort-based. And while that's incredibly frustrating, those are extremely fixable. When it comes to getting the loose balls, when it comes to avoiding turnovers in the open court that can give those long athletes and the Lakers an easy transition bucket, those are things that, while annoying, they're fixable. I also think that Michael Carter-Williams can help with that, because if there's a night or a short time that your legs are not quite there, and that's something that D'Antoni alluded to on opening night, that's where Michael Carter-Williams should be useful. Tonight, he only played 2 minutes. The Rockets were very ineffective in those 2 minutes. He was minus five, missed both of his shots, had a wide open three, didn't take it, got to the free throw line, but missed both of those, and was immediately taken out for Gerald Green, who played very well. And with it being early in the year and there not being much of a sample size, I know some are going to say, well, is this it for Michael Carter-Williams? Do they pull the plug? I don't think so. To me, I think this is a matchup that's especially bad for Michael Carter-Williams, because when you look at a Laker team that has so much length, not just at a few spots on the front line, which certainly JaVale McGee, Brandon Ingram is uber-athletic, LeBron James is a tank and a freak of nature, but then you look at even their backcourt players, Rondo, Caldwell Pope, Lonzo Ball, the Kyle Kuzmas of the world, everyone is so long, so rangy, so springy. And that's the kind of team that, if you can't shoot threes, which Michael Carter-Williams cannot, then it makes it all the more difficult, because even if you're able to drive, the odds are someone else is going to be able to help and, with their length, either block or contest your shots or deny your ability to get to that spot. And against a lot of teams, even if he can't make threes, Carter-Williams is athletic enough, he's springy enough, that he can still make plays. That's what we saw. As mentioned, he was about the only one that had a positive plus-minus in your entire rotation on Wednesday against the Pelicans. Against a lot of teams, you can get by with that. Against the Pelicans, for example, who have relatively small guards and run with a lot of three-guard sets, I don't think it's a coincidence that that's when Michael Carter-Williams had more success, because there's more room on the floor to operate. This one, because there's so much vertical and horizontal spacing with how long the Lakers are, if you can't make your threes, then the spacing is going to be gummed up. I don't care how good you are at angles. I don't care how good you are at taking it off the dribble. So while I'm not going to say that it was an encouraging night for Michael Carter-Williams, I'm also not going to be overly concerned about it either. I'm going to have a little more patience. And in the context of Chris Paul's suspension, I suppose the good news, if you want to have a greater sample on Michael Carter-Williams to evaluate, is that we're going to get one, because with Chris Paul out likely for a game or two, then the odds are Michael Carter-Williams is going to get to play more. And my suspicion, a little tongue-tied there, is that against the Clippers and Jazz, he'll have a little more success than he did against the Lakers. And ultimately, again, I think he's a guy that can help you with energy. And ultimately, I think that's what the Rockets need more of. And while that's frustrating, I get it. The Rockets could have won this game by 15 or 20 under better circumstances. At the same time, to me, as far as defensive problems go, those are good defensive problems to have, because it's not just about technique, so to speak. It's not about X's and O's. It's not so much about coaching. It's about things that are very easy to clean up. Hopefully, with players not just getting into shape physically, but mentally as well, and seeing their mistakes on film. These are mistakes that, while extremely frustrating and they have you almost pulling your hair out at times, at the same time, I do think they're fixable. And I think the numbers with those bench guys who seem to play with a lot of vigor tonight reflect just how good this Rockets team can be when, A, they have Chris Paul and James Harden doing their thing, which they didn't on Wednesday night, but they did tonight, combined 64 points, 15 assists on better than 50% shooting from overall and right at 50% from three, and then B, you combine that with energy from your other three role players and hopefully a little bit of spot-up shooting as well. Didn't even have that tonight, so just imagine when the role players are making their threes as well. But overall, was it a frustrating game? To some degree, yes, but I come out fairly encouraged in terms of where the weaknesses were, because I do think, by and large, those are correctable. Final point that I want to get to, and I'm just going to reiterate what I know a lot of the talk shows are going to be saying all day Sunday, which is trying to break down exactly what happened in this so-called fight between Chris Paul and Rajon Rondo. if what Chris Paul says Rajon Rondo did, which is spit in his face, this after another member of the Lakers, Brandon Ingram, shoved James Harden hard in the back when he wasn't even looking, then I understand the degree of frustration. That said, the Rockets do need to be more mature than that no matter what they do. At the same time, Chris Paul is so valuable that, look, if this were a playoff series and Chris Paul were out for the Rockets and Rajon Rondo and Brandon Ingram were out for the Lakers, that's a net win for the Lakers, and he has to be aware of that. Now, I'm not going to be that hard on Chris because ultimately I don't think Chris would react quite the same way if this were a playoff game. I think he understands that this is game two, and while if it does cost the Rockets a game, it's frustrating because, again, the margins in the Western Conference are very, very small. The Jazz looked very good against the Warriors on Friday night, even in a one-point loss, so maybe they're ready to push you for those top two spots as well. You never know. We'll get our look at them on Wednesday, and who knows if Chris Paul is going to be back for that game. But ultimately, my guess is that Chris Paul, underneath it all, would respond differently if the game or the upcoming games really, really mattered. But I do think it's important to make that point, because even if his version of the story is right, and if it is, I certainly get the frustration. I also think the team as a whole, I did see the Lakers taking a few cheap shots throughout the game. Rajon Rondo and Lance Stephenson have quite a reputation. And then you combine with what Ingram did to Harden, the officials not really taking care of the situation. I understand the degree of frustration. I understand the instinct to defend yourself, but again, it's important to remember, this is not the street. This is a highly regulated NBA arena in which these players are held to very high standards, and the NBA has to take a very hard line on these things, or else it's a very slippery slope to some of the things that happened in prior decades that, quite simply, were not good for the league as a whole. So, with Chris, I'm going to guess that his behavior would have been different if it were not Game 2. And in the short term, I can actually see some positive from this, because I do think, as I mentioned, the Rockets finished the game on, I believe, a 15-7 kick after that. So it did kind of serve as a galvanizing effect, if you will. I think it kicked them into gear, a Rockets team that, you know, I mentioned going into the year, especially after that loss really from the outset on Wednesday. How much are they really into this new season, the grind? Are they really engaged the way they were a year ago? Well, after that, they were engaged. Maybe it's a ticket to getting the team snapped back into it. It certainly appeared to, again, over the final 4:13 of that game, led by James Harden. And if that's the case, then yeah, I don't mind it in the short term. In some ways, there might even be some positives that come out of it, although in the short term, losing Chris Paul for a game or two definitely will hurt. However, even if we acknowledge those positives, I think you also have to be aware, and my guess is the Rockets will say this behind closed doors, even though they don't to the media, if this were the playoffs, you can't react that way. I don't care what they do. I don't care if the officials theoretically had an opportunity to stop it and didn't. The league, when you do that, is going to weigh in a way that really hurts your basketball team if a top 10 player in the league isn't out there. So it's one of those things. Ultimately, in the short term, do I buy that it can have a positive effect on team morale? Do I buy that the team might come together over that in some ways? Yeah, I do. And so, you know, I kind of enjoyed the finish of the game, I'm not going to lie, because from what I saw, it certainly seemed to be initiated and escalated by the Lakers. So in some ways, I thought the Lakers got what was coming to them, and it's fun to see. But at the same time, big picture, to win an NBA title, you can't just fulfill your emotional whims. You also have to be smart. You have to be strategic. And if this were a bigger situation, that would not be a smart play at all. That could be very, very costly to the Rockets. So in closing, overall, do I mind it? Based on what I understand of the situation, I think Chris, at least as a man, as a human being, was justified in his response. But even if we acknowledge that, and even if we praise the team's play, the way they seem to come together after that, we also, and the team as a whole, and I would bet anything behind closed doors that they're thinking and saying very similar things, have to be aware of the fact that, hey, if this were the playoffs, if this were a higher leverage situation, that can't happen. I don't care what the situation is. And sure, there are things that the league needs to do better, especially from an officiating standpoint, to get a hold of that situation before it can escalate so quickly. But at the same time, Chris needs to take care of what he can control as well. And hopefully, should this happen, if these two teams meet in the playoff series, not really that far-fetched, see the Rockets as a 1 or a 2 seed and the Lakers as a 7 or an 8, then hopefully you don't have quite as quick a fuse as Chris did tonight. I don't think it's necessarily negative in the short term. It could be in the long term. But as long as Chris has the needed perspective, and again, as one of the best point guards and smartest players the NBA has ever seen, I'm pretty confident he does. As long as that's the case, ultimately, it's going to be fine. It just might be a game or two without him, which certainly in the short term will make things a little more difficult the next couple of games for the Rockets. So anyway, until that next game, that's where we will leave it. Until then, if you want more content, you can certainly follow me on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And if you haven't already subscribed to the show, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. The odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find Locked On Rockets because we're part of a great network of shows across the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts across the NBA, NFL, even some Major League Baseball and college sports as well. That includes Locked On Texans and Locked On Aggies here in the greater Houston area. So if you haven't subscribed to us already, please do. Also leave us a 5-star review if you can, because that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for tonight, this will do it. Again, Rockets winners 124-115 over the Lakers, improving to 1-1 on the year. Back at it in the second night of a back-to-back tomorrow night, also at Staples Center, but this time against the LA Clippers, and I'll be talking with you again after that show. For now, enjoy the rest of your Saturday night if you're listening then. If not, enjoy your Sunday, and come back soon and check out more recaps right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.